Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, put your head back in the clouds and shut your mouth. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
You know, I had something happen to me last week that's not the first time it's happened, and it's always a brand new frustration every time, but I had a couple of those work days where...
Badoop. Sorry, you got an email there, Joe.
Oh, hold on. Let me answer it for you.
Yeah.
Right. No. Hold on. There you go. No, I had several days last week where I had a to-do list
yes.
of things I needed to research and write, and you know, you all know the kind of work we do around here. And
feed the gremlins.
I was busy all day, but at the end of the day, I realized I had crossed almost nothing off of my to-do list, and in fact had added things to my to-do list.
So your to-do list got longer, very few things were clicked off, and yet you felt like your entire day was pretty much taken up with work.
Yeah.
How'd that work?
What happened? Well, I realized looking back through my email that, I just spent most of these days answering emails, reading emails, answering emails, and responding to messages and notifications on our social media accounts.
So in other words, every time you would start to get to tackle one of the tasks on your to-do list, something else would pop up, interrupt you, and you would take time away from that task to attend to whatever that might be.
Bingo. I'm sure y'all have days like this too.
Yeah.
Most days, honestly.
They're called weekdays.
Yeah. It's great. You know, one of the things that you can do once you're finally done with work for the day is get your work done.
Yes.
Yeah. I frequently go home and get that research done that I was meaning to do all day, but instead... Yeah.
I had
meetings and answered some Twitter comments.
If you've ever watched those forward thinking videos that are set in an office and you wonder, oh gosh, I wonder when he wrote those. The answer is 5 a.m. the same day they were shot. And they're shot at 9 a.m. So it's true for me too. Yeah. So as it turns out, there's some great things I love about the internet, y'all. One of the things
really,
I love,
Jonathan, are you
yeah,
sure?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, it employs me. So, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, that kind of thing, right?
As a hitman.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a made man on the internet.
Digital hitman,
you
Jonathan
know,
Strickland.
When I became a gigabit capo, it was a special day. All my life, I wanted to be a wise guy.
No. There are great things about the internet.
Yeah.
And I will tell you one of them.
Tell me.
So I don't live in the same town where I went to college. I went to college and to grad school in different towns, and I don't live in those towns. And social media and the internet helps me keep up with friends of mine that I very likely otherwise would not have been able to keep up with.
That's great. I'm not entirely familiar with the concept of making friends while in college, but I appreciate what you're saying. No, that is one of the things we love about the internet is that it allows us this connectivity to friends and family, whether they are nearby or they move far away. I mean, I've got friends who are working in Korea right now, and I can keep up with their lives on a regular basis. It's not as infrequent as a letter every few months or a few years, for example.
Yeah, in ye old days, even if you had wanted to keep up with them on a day-to-day basis, it would have been physically impossible.
Yeah.
Due to the speed of mail carriers and, oceans existing.
You could be living a day-to-day basis, but you'd each be like a month behind.
Right.
Right. You're like, well, this is what happened on Tuesday of last month to my friend. And we can also use social graphs and social networks to discover connections that we didn't know existed before. Even as old as I am and as much as I've been on social networking, it still amazes me when I notice that one of my friends from one circle and a friend from a totally different circle know each other, because to me, they don't exist in that same universe, right? You've got this one circle.
It's like Marvel versus DC.
Yeah.
And just all of a sudden you're like, what, you guys had a mashup?
How is Superman hanging with Thor? When did that happen?
Yeah. I keep promising myself that someday I'm going to stop being surprised when I make a new friend on Facebook and they're already friends with like 87 of my friends.
Right. Also, I've used that metric to kind of decide whether or not I accept friend requests. It was this, so-and-so has sent you a friend request. You have one friend in common. I'm like, ain't going to happen.
Well, I mean, how good is that friend? Am I right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that has to be a remarkably good friend for me to accept that friend request. But no, we can also just keep informed of important events and inform other people of important events in our lives, invite them to stuff using this approach. And we have a support system that's very easy to tap into when we need it. You can argue about whether or not the support is as valuable as what you would get if you were to have face-to-face encounters. But it does matter that, you know, if you're feeling like overwhelmed or upset and you go onto a social networking site and you make an honest statement, say, guys, I'm kind of in the weeds here. Can you help
me out?
I'm
having a rough day. I either need some suggestions or some kitten videos.
Yeah. Usually kitten videos is like, that's like number one prescribed solution to every problem I suggest that I have.
I keep my kitten videos away from internet hitmen.
Oh. You're on the list, Joe. So, at any rate, those are some good things about the internet. We have this immediacy, this connection with so many people, including people that we don't have a real world connection to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've made friends through various forums and groups and even things like just social networks like Facebook or Twitter. Chat rooms associated with other shows. I mean, I made real friends that way, and that would not have been possible without the internet. But there's some other things about the internet that are more problematic. One of those being that perhaps these interactions we have online aren't as deep or meaningful in some way or complex in some way as real world interactions. Although that really kind of comes down to a lot of, you know, like, it feels this way, so it must be this way.
Yeah, getting a precise answer to that particular question is difficult, just because defining the quality of a given relationship is really difficult. You've got all these factors to contend with, you know, the type of relationship, if it's a romantic or friendship or acquaintance, whether it's a static relationship or whether it's actively changing, the demographics of the people in question, mm-hmm. their age, their education, their sex, their gender, their marital status, their income, the quality of their other relationships, and so on. So there have been a bunch of scholarly surveys done, but the only sweeping conclusion that they come to is that you get out of online relationships what you put in to online relationships.
Which makes sense.
Well, and that people who are more comfortable with technology will have higher quality online relationships.
Right. So it'll be more of an analog to what the real world relationship would be for those people, whereas for people who might lack that level of savvy, they may feel like the interactions they have are trivial or not meaningful. It is really interesting to me because if you do the search on this and you're not looking at the scholarly stuff, you see a lot of just kind of armchair psychology.
Oh, yeah. Much of it.
Yeah. Like social media is destroying our ability to have real world relationships.
Think of the children. How will the children possibly communicate?
Now, I will admit that I like to use the internet to skip certain mundane interactions,
mm-hmm.
things like using Amazon to buy stuff instead of going to a store. But that's really more because I'm lazy and less that I want to avoid real world interactions. So there's that to be said. And also another downside to online communication is that, like we said in our tone analyzer episode, sometimes it's difficult to communicate clearly because we're limited in the level of communication we can have with someone else.
Even if you're using as many smiley faces and little icons of martini glasses as you have available to you.
Yeah. So, of course, in the real world, we can have body language. You can have the tone of your voice, the pacing of what you are saying, so people know what you're stressing versus not stressing.
You know, whether or not you're making very rude gestures while you're saying something.
Yeah, if you're making eye contact or not making eye contact. All of these things play into the communication we have with someone else in the real world. In an online setting, you lose a lot of that. So it can be easy to send a message that can easily be misinterpreted. And someone might end up taking it the wrong way and getting their feelings hurt or being confused by the message. So dealing with that gets a little exhausting. But the really big problem with all this online communication is the one that Joe was talking about at the top of the show. The fact that we now have all these different channels through which communication can come to us, that there are lots of potential ways that we can be interrupted throughout the day. And we're inventing new ones every single day, not just new platforms like new versions of Twitter or Facebook, but new ways that those can annoy us, like a device you wear on your wrist or even your face that will let you know whenever.
It will physically move whenever you've got a message coming
It'll
in.
Vibrate and thus get your attention and pull it away from whatever it was you were doing in the first place to say, hey, Joe Bob just liked this barbecue joint. You should know about that.
You know, I want to take this a step further and just speak about an anecdotal experience.
Okay.
I don't have research to back this up, but maybe y'all will say if you agree.
All right.
I think that just having the devices through which notifications can be delivered present, even if you are not currently getting notifications, can be a distraction.
I agree.
So if I'm reading a book, I will get a much better experience of reading that book if I put my phone and my computer at the other end of the house in a different room.
What's a book?
I
was just noticing this the other day. I was having a wonderful experience reading a great book, and I realized, you know, I'm so glad I don't have my laptop sitting next to me.
I fully agree. I have a whole podcast I do with two other people. It's not a How Stuff Works podcast, but it's a podcast I do where one of the things we try and do is watch movies with no distractions present because we all three, I just don't count Eric Sandin. No, we all three agree that we have seen our attention spans diminish over time, and we often have distractions present when we're watching something at home, like a laptop's open or our smartphone or tablet is nearby.
Sometimes all three.
And we know that we're not paying full attention to the actual story that's unfolding on the screen, and therefore you can even have a conversation about a movie you quote-unquote saw and have no memory of stuff that happened in that movie because you weren't really paying attention. You didn't commit it to memory because you weren't really focusing on it.
Oh, yeah. And that's not just anecdotal. Research shows that we are genuinely bad at multitasking.
Yes.
One study out of the University of Utah published in 2013 indicated that, in fact, the more confident participants were in their multitasking abilities, the worse they were at multitasking.
Big surprise.
Yeah, here's the thing is that I know I'm terrible at multitasking. Guess what? I'm terrible at multitasking. That's anecdotal.
Another study from Stanford in 2009 showed that we perform worse on every task we're doing when we multitask. Mm-hmm. And for a statistical example of that, I turned to yet another study, this one out of Carnegie Mellon, also in 2009, which used fMRI to measure participants' brain activity in the parietal lobe, which is the one associated with spatial processing, while they were steering a vehicle along a virtual road. And so while the participants were concurrently listening to sentences being read out loud, their spatial brain activity decreased by 37%.
That's not terrifying at all.
So that's at least one example in which we are more than a third handicapped by trying to do more than one thing at once.
Yeah. And so this plays into the purpose why we even are doing this show. Like we wanted to talk about how all these notifications and interruptions and demands on our attention can decrease the quality of whatever task we're performing or attempting to perform at that time. But we also wanted to talk about how at least one group of researchers is trying to decrease that effect on us. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it through technology.
Amazing technology.
Yeah, so the answer to the problem of technology having too many ways to get in touch with us is more technology.
Yes. Wait. What?
So, again, the proposal, the approach that they're talking.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Every time you're about to try to multitask with different technology devices, a robot on a tank tread with the chainsaw bursts out of the wall, runs at you, says, don't do that.
An excellent guess. Not 100% accurate.
I think that would be very, very calming and non-distracting. I think that would really help me get tied right back into what I was doing in the first place.
It's actually a special pair of glasses you wear, and every time you attempt to multitask, spikes embed into your temples and then scramble right behind your eyeballs. No, that doesn't happen either. In neither case does that happen.
Yeah. For some reason, the researchers at Tufts University
do eyeball impalement. Yeah.
Or chainsaw robots.
Right. So we're just throwing some extra ideas out there if this other version doesn't pan out.
Well, tell me about the real proposal.
Okay. So they started with that premise that the interruptions that we experience in life, as Joe was mentioning at the top of the episode, can really hurt productivity. And they increase our anxiety levels.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have this increased feeling that we're never going to complete the stuff we need to complete. And like Joe was saying, sometimes we're not even able to identify why that's the case in the moment. It's only after we reflect that we realize, oh, I was wondering why I was feeling so busy, but yet I wasn't getting anything done. So this is, that contributes to our anxiety. And they said, well, how can we decrease that and increase our productivity? And limit interruptions so that we get notifications, but we only get the notifications when our brain is ready to receive notifications. In other words, when we're not trying to focus on some other task, which is kind of tricky, right? Like, how do you tell your smartphone, hey, when I'm actually reading this research about notifications, don't buzz in my pocket?
Well, just plug your smartphone straight into your brain through your brain port.
And then just have your smartphone say, no, wait, he's busy.
Folks at home, I don't know if you've heard, Jonathan's gotten like several notifications since we've been in here.
Yeah. Well, I'm a popular guy. What can I say? I have not looked at them. I just keep my phone in my pocket. But
I was checking Facebook like 44 seconds ago.
I do see that I have a notification.
No, really?
I wouldn't lie.
I mean, no shame.
About
but
Facebook.
I have a notification on Facebook. I haven't looked at it yet, but that little number one in the
right?
notification is bothering me. So the paper...
Joe is judging us so hard.
No. Well, I mean, no, I'm looking at Twitter right now.
Okay. So we're all guilty of it. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast and you also have Facebook or Twitter open, shut that down. Come on. Show some respect.
Fold your laundry like a normal person
right.
listening to a podcast.
Do something that doesn't require any sort of concentration so our melodious voices can wash over you. The paper that the team published actually cited a study by Bailey and Constant in which people had to perform multiple tasks simultaneously. And the results are just in line with the same studies that Lauren was mentioning earlier. The participants reported higher levels of anxiety. They committed twice as many errors, plus took 25% longer to complete a primary task than they would if they were allowed uninterrupted time to work on a single task, if they had downtime to do this instead of being bombarded by other tasks. So how does this technology work that makes us, sane by limiting the notifications to times when we can handle them? Well, the first thing they had to do was figure out how were they going to measure brain activity to figure out when we're focusing on something versus when we're done with a task. Because they had determined that the in-between time for tasks would be the ideal moment to send notifications because you
save them up and send them then.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I can handle this now. And then when you're done, you could move on to the next task.
Well, it seems like one option they have would be EEG.
Yeah, but those do have a downside in that movement can create false data, like errors in the data.
Mm-hmm.
So
false positives.
False positives, yeah. So it may be that if you're typing, not even like moving, not like necessarily doing, jumping jacks or something. If you're typing, just the typing alone could create enough movement to create false positives. And then it would not be able to set the threshold for when you are actually focusing on a task versus when you are kind of in a down mode.
Okay, so electroencephalography is out.
Yep. So instead, they decided to look at functional near-infrared spectroscopy.
FNIRS.
So this is where you're going to think we're saying snarf because it just sounds similar.
We're not. We're saying FNIRS.
So FNIRS from now on.
Yeah, we're all temporarily pinky from Pinky and the Brain.
That's right. Yeah, it's very similar to NARF. Yeah. So the technology uses infrared light to scan for brain activity. And infrared light can penetrate bone and other tissue, including neural tissue, to a depth of 3 centimeters, in case you were wondering, because that's how this works. But it's absorbed and scattered by hemoglobin.
Hmm.
And hemoglobin's optical properties depend upon whether or not it's oxygenated or deoxygenated.
Ooh.
So using two different wavelengths of infrared light and measuring with a detector which ones are coming back to that sensor can tell you about the blood flow in the brain, which in turn tells you about brain activity.
Sure, because I would imagine that more blood flow equals more brain activity.
Yeah, specifically more oxygenated blood flow would tell you, hey, this person is really concentrating because the blood flow indicates that they need to think about something. Now, the paper points out that this FNIRS technology isn't ideal for all applications, because it takes several seconds for changes in blood flow to actually reach the brain. So you, when you start to concentrate on a task, it takes a couple seconds for the blood flow to accommodate that. And you wouldn't be able to use the same technology as a means of controlling, like a robot necessarily, at least not without lag, because it would take a couple seconds before it detected that increase of blood flow for it to be able to send a command. And that would get frustrating. We've all experienced lag in some way. That's never fun.
It's the worst, usually.
Yeah, especially if you're online and you're trying to play a game of Halo and, you know,
You're already handicapped by being, in our cases, Jonathan or Lauren.
Yeah, we have the handicap of being us. And then, you know, you get a sniper gun and you line up on somebody and you're sure they're right in front of you. But in truth, they've already moved 4 feet to the left because you're lagging. Not fun.
Yeah, I mean, lagging is... Having a delay is worse than having nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it's more frustrating if your computer continues to work but is very slow than if it just crashes and stops.
That is absolutely true. So FNIRS would not be good for that, but FNIRS is fine for monitoring brain states, general brain states, because it doesn't need to have that immediacy for it to detect when you are focusing versus when you have completed something. Also, it's not as sensitive to movement as EEG technology can be. So studies have shown that these sensors can be used on people who are engaged in activities that require a lot of movement, including things like jogging, with, quote, only slightly higher error rates than a traditional clinical device, end quote. So it's ideal for that kind of application. And you could create such a device and attach it to something else, like a wearable, like specifically like Google Glass, because obviously you'd have to wear it on your head for it to detect neural activity, because that's where it happens. So you would need to put some sort of wearable device on your head to be able to detect this blood flow.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. You're like blowing my elbow mind.
I know. Sorry. I can tell you where I keep my brain, at least according to my wife, but it's a family podcast. So at any rate, you would probably attach this to something like Google Glass, which would give you those notifications. And that's a great example anyway, because it's got a screen that's right there. Like, it's just incredibly accessible to get those interruptions that would cause you some anxiety and stress and decrease your productivity. Mm-hmm. So they then created software, because that's the hardware side to do the detection. But now they have to create the software that actually interprets the data that's collected by the device. And the software they call Filter, Phylter. So Filter takes the FNIRS data and then tries to interpret whether or not that means you are concentrating on a task or you are not concentrating. So in general, the strategy is Filter will restrict notifications of low importance from going to you immediately and hold back until your brain activity indicates you are no longer focusing. Then it releases those notifications. So if you're really focusing on studying and then you take a break and you're like, all right, I need to rest, that's when those less important notifications would come to you.
Yeah. And since not all of our brains are exactly the same, they came up with a way to account for that too.
Right. It might be that if I'm focusing really hard, I have a certain amount of blood flow in my brain that is equivalent to Lauren just taking it easy because my ability to focus is so pathetic that it's like Lauren at rest. But you know, so if we're both using the same device, it wouldn't know that I was focusing. It'd be like, oh, Jonathan's just taking it easy. Here's a whole bunch of notifications. So what we need is the learning algorithm on the back end to say, all right, this is what it looks like when Jonathan is concentrating versus this is what it looks like when Lauren is concentrating. And it, you know, you have to train it just like with any learning algorithm. We've talked about this so much on the, in past forward thinking podcasts. So The way they would train this is you would do simulations of stuff that would require you to focus, and simulations of stuff that would be like low workload moments when you aren't required to really focus your attention. And the learning algorithm starts to pick up on those patterns, and then it can extrapolate from the data in real world situations whether or not you're focusing with pretty good degree of accuracy once it's gone through that training. So it also relies on another thing. It relies on the notifications themselves having some sort of metadata attached to them to let the actual software know which notifications are really important, which ones are kind of important but can wait, and which ones are not important and can be archived, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that you can set these filters yourself, like, say, always let through calls from my wife.
I think it probably would depend upon specifically the platform or the device that this is attached to. I think exactly what you're saying, because, you know, we've got a lot of platforms like Gmail that allows us to do this, right? It already automatically sorts things into, well, this goes into your priority inbox, this goes into your social inbox, this goes into promotions inbox, and you can set up other filters. I'm sure a lot of that is possible for users to indicate. And the idea being that you would, anything that has a high importance, like an always send level of importance, means that it will come to you even if it's an interruption, which is important for certain events. Like if someone needs to get in touch with you because of an emergency, then obviously you want that notification to come through.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the never interrupt messages, the never send messages. Those would just go to an archive where you could go seek it out on purpose. Like if I logged into my Gmail account to look at my mail, then I could see the ones that were there, but they wouldn't interrupt me. And then there would be the adaptive ones that would be withheld until you reach those points of the day where you're not focusing on a task, and that's when the adaptive ones would get sent through. So not very different from the way we do things now. So it's a pretty interesting approach to solving this problem of let's not get rid of notifications. Let's just have a way to save the notifications for the times when we're able to deal with them, as opposed to just flooding us all throughout the day. So I think that's a pretty neat approach, neat solution.
Yeah. And we should specify that this is not a product that is like ready for consumer purchase yet.
No.
This is a concept design.
Yeah, it's essentially something that's being developed. Whether it'll ever become a product that you can go out and purchase, I don't know. For one thing, requires you wear something on your head.
Mm-hmm.
So
that puts infrared waves into your brain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At depths of 3 centimeters.
I mean, it's one of those deals where, like, is it going to be built into a product in such a way that people won't feel self-conscious about wearing it when they are working? I suppose if you are maybe studying in a dorm room and you have this thing on, then that's one thing. But if you're in an office like we are, where we're trying to get research done, can you imagine all the photos that come out, the videos that are being done where like people would be watching a video from How Stuff Works where the office is in the background and wondering why everyone's wearing these tinfoil pyramids on their heads.
Well, I think that if you actually put it into something like headphones, because frequently headphones are what I put on, whether or not, big secret here, you guys, whether or not I'm actually listening to anything as my cue to leave me the heck alone when I'm sitting in the office trying to get work done.
I do the same thing with earbuds. Unfortunately, they're not as visible, so not as effective.
Yeah. I've got like big obnoxious green things. Yeah. So like a Princess Leia bun style sort of stuff. Yeah. So
they're Beats by Dre.
Yeah. Our previous company was very nice in getting us all large, obnoxiously colored, very excellent headphones.
Which I broke.
Mine were broken when I got them out of the box.
Yeah. Mine were working until I broke them. So now I have earbuds.
Lauren, I want to apologize for all the times I've tried to talk to you when you had earheads
on the head.
Yeah.
You always had pertinent things to say to me. They were always important. You were never like, hey, look at this picture of my dog. Which is not what you sound like, by the way. I'm not sure where that
impression is. Come on, you can be honest.
Lauren sits across from me, and I'm an extrovert, so it is necessary for her to put up the barrier so that I don't consistently bother her. But it's okay, Lauren, because I know how you feel, because Josh Clark sits next to me. So anyway, as I was saying, one of the interesting questions we have is...
Josh Clark is more likely to slurp soup at you than talk to you.
That is so not true. You just don't hear. Like, every day that he is here and I am here, this is a little peek behind the curtain. His art is not necessarily to say anything to me. It's to sit back in his chair and stare directly into the side of my head for minutes at a time if I let him, until I turn and look at him, and then he just kind of gives me a half smirk and then turns back to his work.
His Strickland trolling game is really good.
You got to remember, he was hired like just a few months after I was, so he and I, man, that stuff goes way back. Anyway, of that. So one thing we thought we'd turn the conversation to is putting this technology aside, whether or not it ever becomes available to the general consumer, will we ever get to a point where it won't matter because we will just have adapted to this world of constant notifications and interruptions?
Oh, yeah. And brains are really plastic. We have an amazing capacity as human people to adapt to new situations.
Yeah, but...
So here's the thing I would say. Are we talking about actually our bodies evolving, like biological evolution, changing our brains? Because that, I don't know, it seems to me unless there is a selection pressure that is killing people or preventing them from having children if they can't handle all the notifications.
I don't know it's so much of an evolution thing as it is, because keep in mind, this is so complex. It's both nature and nurture that we're talking about here, with the nurture part being the experience. Like if you – some
– Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I absolutely understand. Yeah. It's a combination. I mean, like if you're talking about changing what our brains are naturally capable of, I don't know about that.
I don't know about naturally capable of. I think more of the brains are shaped simply through the experience.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So in other words, if you – from the moment you are consuming media – this is the way things work for you, then
to read on an iPhone, and from that moment, you get constant interruptions.
Then it may be a very different experience for you versus somebody who was alive before the web was a thing and didn't have all these various interruptions that could potentially distract someone from a task. I don't know that answer. It's probably too early to really say. But we do know, like as of right now, that multitasking, except for a very tiny percentage of the population, is something that we're just not good at.
Not at all.
Yeah. Like, it's something like 2% of the population is the most recent number I've heard.
Super taskers. Yeah, the rest of us are
terrible.
And
if you think you're part of that 2%,
you're probably extra bad.
Yeah, the more you think you're part of that 2%, the less likely it's true.
I imagine multitasking. Well, I guess what this would be, it would be a specific case of the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Specifically for multitasking competence.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So another adaptation we might see is just a shorter attention span, though this is a very difficult thing to really nail down. But according to the National Center for Biotechnology Information, which is part of the U.S. National Library of Medicine, our attention spans have been on the decline for a while.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Back in 2000, it was 12 seconds. And now it's 8.25 seconds.
What was 12 seconds?
Attention spans. What were we just talking about? Is that what you're going to ask?
What about them?
All right. So short-term memory, obviously, also on the decline. According to the National Center for Biotechnology Information, our attention spans are getting worse. So we're having problems actually doing this focusing thing in the first place. That after 8.25 seconds, we have this issue with our attention spans. Yeah. I thought it was funny because I kept seeing figures like this without any attribution to the source. Mm-hmm. And some of the numbers
sounds fishy.
Yeah, some of the numbers were ridiculous. And it made me think, like, I need to see if there actually is a reliable source out there that cites this. Because all of the articles I was seeing or infographics, some of them were miles wrong. Some of them said 12 minutes attention span, not seconds, but minutes, and had dropped down to 5 seconds. And that's not what the
12 minutes to 5 seconds.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, How is that possible?
And yes, this is a side note about how you should always check for sources, and if you don't find any, you Google until you do.
Yeah.
Until you do,
and
rather.
That's exactly what I was doing, too. I kept going back, because all the sources I was finding were listicles and things like that, or yeah. infographics. Yeah. And when I was trying to track down the data, I finally found it with information on this government, U.S. government center. And even then, we can't draw any firm conclusions about why attention spans have been on the decline. Or even, I don't even know what metrics they used or how they went about measuring it. I don't know enough to feel like this number is meaningful without seeing the actual studies and how it was measured. You know, it's an interesting possible fact.
I found some other interesting research. There was a report out of Ohio State University in 2012 that indicated that we still feel good about multitasking even when we're less productive because of it. I didn't read the full thing, so I can't tell you in what way we find
multitasking. Is that 8.25 second attention span kicking in?
Yeah, like why we find it emotionally fulfilling. But
yeah.
but apparently a significant number of participants in their study do.
You know, my guess would be purely a guess, but it's not that we find it emotionally fulfilling, but that we find it, it's like we punch the clock, you know, we put our time in. Like
yeah.
when you do some multitasking, you feel like, well, I've earned some relaxing.
Which is kind of silly because if you were to focus on single tasks for most
right,
of us
you'd
anyway,
get more done.
You would be finished way earlier.
But you don't judge the merits of your labors by what you've objectively produced. You judge it by how much work it was.
How
for
harrowing
you.
It was to
right.
get from point A to point B.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And since we are more stressed out while we're multitasking, we're like, man, I was so stressed out today. Yeah. I must have done some stuff.
Right. I didn't get anything done, but I sure felt like I was in trouble.
Well, I feel like we broke some new ground today, guys. Well, this was really interesting. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, it's I don't think I ever operated under the assumption that I was good at multitasking. I don't think I ever felt like I was confident or competent at that. So it's interesting to me to think that people had really overestimated their ability to do that sort of stuff.
Let's end this episode with some personal anecdotally only supported tips. And I'm going to have one of mine in addition to what I said earlier. So if you want to concentrate on a book or something, put all your notification supplying devices in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is close tabs.
You've
got your browser open. You're trying to get some work done. I think I've discovered that it's actually easier to get work done if you close a bunch of those other tabs. Even if you're going to use them, just save them for later, close them.
Lauren, any tips?
Well, if I'm really trying to very much concentrate on something, I'll just put my phone in airplane mode, even if I like need for security blanket type reasons to have it next to me, because I don't know about you guys, but I get a little bit itchy when I'm not in personal contact with my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just put it in airplane mode. Nothing will come through. It's beautiful. Or akin to shutting down extra tabs, turn off your email. Like, close that program.
Yeah, depending on if you can get away with that.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
so,
sure, for short periods of time. The writer Jane Espenson, I think I'm saying that correctly.
Espenson, yeah,
who is a writer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and is currently working on a whole bunch of different projects, has these Twitter runs, sprints, attention sprints, where she gets on Twitter and she's like, "Hey guys, I'm going to go on an attention sprint for an hour. Shut down all of the things, concentrate only on this one task," and encourages other people to do it too. And I think that that's a fun, you know, crowdsource responsibility kind of way of going about
good
it.
Good tips.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it depends on if people in your workplace demand instant responses to email all the time. If they do, you might want to try and figure out a way that that doesn't dominate the culture of your workplace, because it really is helpful if you can batch your email. I say that as somebody who doesn't do that most of the time.
Yeah.
Well, again, those notifications pop up and it's really hard to just, you know, not look at the corner of your screen to see what the subject matter of that email is or from whom it arrived, because, you know, there's certain names that when they pop up, you're like,
oh,
I need to
go check that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we got to figure out a time to have this meeting where we're going to talk about what we're going to do at the meeting.
Yeah, and or have that meeting about how to have fewer meetings.
Well, that's my favorite meeting.
My my tip is if you really want to pay very close attention to some form of entertainment, you should start a podcast, and I'm a co-host on it, and we will come up with some ridiculous gimmick to make that the central premise for the existence of that podcast, and that'll help. Because it's really helped me watch really terrible movies online. So, you know, it works. I mean, anecdotally. I only have so many hours in the day, though, so first come, first served.
We're big on the anecdotes today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we already had our podcast where we talked about the really rigorous scientific study, so now we can go anecdote city.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was actually a lot of fun to talk about, and we've got lots of ideas for future episodes, but we always want to hear from you guys, and we want to hear about your experiences. Maybe you have tips that you would like us to share on a future podcast about ways to really concentrate and cut down on these distractions.
Send them in. Jonathan, how can they send them in?
They can send us an email. That address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook. At Twitter, we are fwthinking, and on Facebook, just search fwthinking. We'll pop right up, and you can leave us a message there, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.